The following presentation was recorded in 1998 at the Faith Builders Workshops on Child Development. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Well, let's think about learning disabilities. Let me read you a little free verse poem entitled, "Teach Me, Don't Label Me." I am not disabled. I learn differently. I am not handicapped. I take in and use information that is somewhat unique to me. Others may see me as handicapped when they insist on teaching me in ways through which I cannot learn, or when they insist that I demonstrate my abilities in ways that are comfortable for them, but not for me. It is not I who am out of step, inadequate, handicapped, or disabled. It is the system. I don't want my teacher to be my pal. But I do want a model and a friend. I don't want my teacher to make life easy for me, but I do want a teacher filled with a conviction that he or she teaches, that what he or she teaches is important enough for me to learn. And I do want a teacher who has enthusiasm, that encourages me to keep working until I learn. I don't want to be the teacher's pet, but I do want to be treated as a person worthy of respect in spite of my learning style or because of it. I don't want a teacher who demands praise, but I do want a teacher who understands my respect, even if I show it in an awkward and sometimes hostile way. I don't want a brain transplant, but I do want to learn as much as I am able. I don't want a label, but I do want an appropriate education. I don't want to be called learning disabled, but I do want to learn. Teach me. Don't label me. I had a student back home for 4 years who was an adopted child, and grew up in a home there where fine people, his parents, and yet there was somehow, and I still don't know to this day if it was true or not, but there was always a rumble of rumor that she was not treated fairly in that home, that she was compared. You know, it's amazing. They adopted her. All their children were above average intelligence, and she had a very difficult time in school. So here she was, had adopted sisters older than her and younger, and they all sailed through, were college material, either went to college or will go to college, and yet she struggled to complete her vocational diploma. Well, not only did she struggle academically, but she was the kind of student who would never have wanted to give me any indication at all that she appreciated me. She always acted like she didn't want me around. Just go. I'm fine. I can get that. You know, she was just a very high energy person, was categorized as a ADD student. And I think also was probably somewhat of a doer, didn't learn well visually or hearing, but wanted to do. She was a hands-on kind of person. Yet she loved to write, and was writing poetry all the time. And when write, I should have, maybe I can do that tomorrow. I can bring up a letter she wrote. But when she graduated, she presented me with a hardbound diary, a journal book that she had just chuck full of poems and little things she gave to me when she graduated. And a number of them in there were on teachers. Okay, but you have to understand, the last thing she wanted was for me to get the idea, even one-on-one, even if she gave me that. It was very hard for her to demonstrate any kind of appreciation or liking for me. Well, I spent a lot of time with that girl and prayed with her a number of times. And she felt very strongly about the fact that she was not treated fairly. And I talked and listened and tried to understand, talked to her parents. Her pastor called one time and wanted to do breakfast and just talk about the situation, wanted to know what I knew about it. Well, a number of things happened over those years. I began to perceive, remember this line in here, I do want a teacher, I don't want a teacher who demands praise, okay, from the student to the teacher. But I do want a teacher who understands my respect, even if I show it in an awkward and sometimes hostile way. Well, that was this gal. But I began to perceive at times that I just had to give her space and give her room and laugh with her and say, that's fine, even though I felt really pushed off, really held at arm's length. But I began to perceive when she was enjoying the interaction. And it was not at all a normal way to demonstrate that you enjoyed the interaction. But you know, it's interesting. She gave me that book when she graduated, and a year later when she got married, she wanted me to come and sing a solo at her wedding. And a guy to come in there and do the wedding, because she couldn't find a pastor who would do this. So there's a lot of wrenching emotions for mom and dad, for close friends, schoolmates who came and sat on that wedding. But it's interesting, she has since showed up with her husband at a different school events just to try to stay in contact with people from her school years. And last time I was there, she did manage a little bit of poise, and she actually wanted to talk, and we just sat, and her husband was there, and we just sat and talked. That was great. But I tell you, she caused me more misery for 4 years. And it seems like special students do that. And there were many times when I just wished she would have been gone, you know, just go. Well, I'll never forget the one day I sat her down in my office and I said, I'll just call her Susie. And I said, Susie, I'm going to tell you something here. And to be quite honest, you know, I felt a little bit like I was just taking a knife and just, you know, cutting some things open. But I told her, I said, Susie, I know you feel like your family doesn't treat you right. And I just named her sisters and her dad and her mom and things that I knew that she said they had done and how that would make her feel. I just verbalized all those feelings because she wasn't really able to verbalize them. She was just always uptight, angry, couldn't think, didn't want to work, and all these things. And so I just took 5 minutes and I just verbalized for her what she must be feeling. How I would feel. I said, I know you feel this way. I would feel this way if it was me. And I just laid it all out. And she sat there and she was crying. But my question was, Susie, what are you going to do about it? Is there anything that you can do to change it? That's the hard truth of it, really is. Well, there's not a thing she could do. I said, you have a decision. And I don't recommend, I would never approach people this way the first time around. This is after many talks and trying to be very understanding and crying with her on different occasions. But I said, I don't know what you can do. You can sit here and let those bad things be excuses for copping out on life. But I said, if you want anything to happen, you're going to have to say, hey, that happened, but I refuse to be bound by that. I refuse to let that determine who I am today. And I'm going to make some choices in spite of the great pain of all of that. I'm going to make some choices, and my life's going to be different. I don't really know how much difference that made, because it's very difficult to make choices in a vacuum. But I really think that all that time and energy was worth it with her. And your problem students are going to be the people. You know, I asked her after I was teaching her for a year or two. She remembered one statement I had made. One statement. You know, hey, I think I'm just dumping encouragement in this lady's life. But she remembered one statement that I probably made in a moment of frustration. She remembered that one statement and said that I didn't want to take the time with her and that I thought she was dumb. That is your problem student. And what I want to say is, oh, you're hearing what you want to hear. But she heard it. And I couldn't argue. And so these students will make you feel like you're not a teacher. They'll make you feel like you can't teach. And we really like the bright students because they make us feel like we're really getting somewhere. You know what? The real bright students, they probably don't need a teacher. So I say don't need. I say that in general terms. But they need guidance more than they need lecture. And your problem students will be your greatest test. Here at our school in Guy's Mills, here at Faith Builders Christian School, we seem to have an abundance of these. Different reasons for that. But I think if this continues, we're going to become experts on learning disabilities. And I'm not an expert yet. Much of this material is not original with me. And I just want to share it with you. I am continuing to learn a lot about what it means to meet the needs of students who are learning disabled. And I want to bring you back again to Maslow's hierarchy of needs and just point out what I think is an accurate observation off of that hierarchy, and that is that if you work with community children or children from homes that are troubled, many of these students will exhibit behavior that we're going to categorize as LD. We're going to label it. They have a learning, they have a tough time in school. And we just need to remember that if they come from a troubled home, they have what I call emotional dissonance. Okay, there's just so much static on the wire, so much static on the line, that they have difficult time giving the energy and the concentration and the focus they need to take in information and to learn it, to remember it. They're processing too many other things. And these people need a ton of love, and many times they're going to act like they don't want it and don't appreciate it from you. Other students, they'll just be like sponges. You can't give them enough. You can't give them enough. But there are things, we're going to look at things you can do to help these people. And most of us, if you're a teacher, you probably enjoyed school. There may be exceptions to this, but you probably enjoyed school and learning was fairly easy for you. And so you're going to have an additional difficulty relating to these people. And I do meet people once in a while who are teachers who said, I didn't like school very well and I see where I could have enjoyed it, should have benefited much more, and so I'm going to teach and I want to help people that have a tough time. Well, I always applaud those people because there's not enough of them in our schools. Because it's those kind of people that are really going to have the heart and passion and understanding. And a lot of us as teachers also were probably good students. We didn't misbehave a lot. We didn't make trouble. Again, there may be exceptions, but most of us are probably good students. So what are we going to feel with this student who just acts up all the time in class? We're going to feel the same way we felt about the fellow student back when we were in school. We thought, why can't she get their act together? And we're going to feel frustration. We're going to have to stop and take a look at our own motivations, our own heart. And I'll just be honest. I wanted all my students to be top-notch students so I would look good. I'll just be very honest. That was a lot of motivation behind my teaching. And it's still there. But the reality of it is that's going to be challenged. And it's part of your character growth as well to have these people in your room. Well, let's look at one other thing before I forget. A number of you wanted copies of some of those charts I had before break. Let me put a few of these on and get a count. Maybe I just need to make a number of copies. We had the two different copies of hemispheric functions, left brain, right brain. There was that one and this one. How many of you want a copy of this one? How many of you want a copy? I'm not sure it's worth counting. Okay, how many want a copy of this one? Okay, less of you. I'll tell you what, I'm going to make... Hold your hands up if you want one of this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. Maybe I'll just make a bunch of them. Maybe I'll make about 50 of each. Okay. And then how about these action words on Bloom's taxonomy? How many of you wanted a copy of that? Okay, I'll make about 40 of those. And if you somehow don't have enough, well, you can find someone that has a copy and ask them to make a copy and don't bother paying for it. There was also Hoag's Ladder. How many of you wanted a copy? I don't see. Maybe it's in here. You know what I mean? Hoag's Ladder. How many wanted a copy of that? Okay, I'll make about 40 of those. Any other copies somebody wanted? Oh, okay. How many would like a copy of that pyramid that I got here from the local Botec? Okay, I'll make about a dozen of those. That's this one right here. Okay. I'll make about 15 copies. Okay. I'll put those, I'll either have them by tomorrow. If you need one for today, if you're leaving today, you'll want to see me before you leave. Otherwise, I'll have them here tomorrow and I'll just set them up here. Okay, LD students.
What I have here, I have the first few stacks on the end. I have about copies there. I made 75 copies. I'm assuming that's enough. The one is simply 50 ways to say good for you, ways to praise. If you get tired of saying good, good job, good, very good. If you want some alternatives, here's a list. And here is a list for practical suggestions in your classroom on how to give directions, how to give daily assignments, how to give presentations, how to help people who have writing and visual or perceptual problems, and then in testing issues for problem students. What to do on different kinds of questions. Whether it's essay, short answer, fill the blank, computation, matching, multiple choice, true, false. Things to think about for your LD student. I have those copies there as well. Then I have a shorter stack. I think I made about 30 or 40 copies on ideas for the gifted. And these are going to be more pertinent to elementary people, because I know there's more of you here probably than high school people. There's 30 or 40 again. If you didn't get a copy, find somebody that did and ask them to make a copy for you. Then I have a stack here for the Learning Disabilities Awareness Teacher Questionnaire. And this is a questionnaire you can use. It's 4 pages. I didn't call it and staple them. So you'll need to take both pages and staple them together. And again, I made lots of these because for grades 7 to 12. But you can take one of each, staple them together, and these questions that you can answer, not at all, sometimes, usually, gives you an idea of whether this student, on an informal evaluation here, this student has a learning problem.
Let's talk about some alternative routes for the LD student. Another discussion that fits here is a little discussion I was having with think his name is Brad. Is that right? What's your name? I was talking to you during the break. Yes. Kevin. I don't know where I got Brad. I've only met Kevin 6 times in the last year, and I can't remember his name. Okay. We're talking about the pros and cons of individualized and conventional classroom. And he was just saying that he gets the feeling when he comes here for workshops and things that we're somewhat critical of individualized classroom. Now, I came up through an ACE school from grades 7 to 12, 6 to 12. So I think I'm, and I went to a number of ACE conventions as a high school. I was a student monitor, and I went to some conventions. My dad was a teacher, and so I heard him talk about it a lot. And my dad is really big on individualized. He taught for 25 years, conventional and individualized, and he's really big on individualized classroom. Well, you know, he experienced public education, and he experienced conventional classroom, and when he found individualized, he said, this is it. This is the way to go. Well, I experienced Christian education and individualized classroom, and when I experienced a lecture in college, I said, this is it. Okay, not quite. My point is that there's advantages and disadvantages to both. And we were just talking here in the break, Kevin and I were talking about the fact that homeschool probably is the ideal educational environment. Because if you need to tell, lecture, you can lecture. If they can work on their own, they can work on their own. If you need to have the flexibility to go on a little field trip and go see how they make cheese, go visit the local farm, go visit the nature preserve, go visit the Grand Canyon, go to Europe. I mean, how big do you want to get? You can do it often if you have the money. You can do it. And it's much more flexible than your local Christian or public school. You take your class to Europe, you're looking at big time expense. But you might be able to take your family out west or over to Europe and experience some geography and other cultures and history. And that kind of learning is going to stick. Let me tell you, that's the best way to do it, because it's one-on-one. It's doing, experiencing. They can, if you as a dad or mom have a trade, you can teach them. If you want to teach them about math and fractions, have them help you bake every week. I mean, all those things. Homeschool is a tremendous learning environment if it's done well. If it's done well. I've seen it done very poorly. I've seen it done very well. So we could talk a long time about pros and cons and all the things. The fact of the matter is, the same thing is true in individualized conventional classroom. You have the same tensions. Individualized classroom, you find those people talking about mini classes, pulling a people out that are in this particular pace or a book. What does CLE call the books? Light unit. If take all the students who are doing this particular light unit and pull them out and lecture the subject. And so we're finding schools on algebra and physics, some of those courses, they'll pull those people out and they'll lecture. Because they say it saves time. Otherwise, I'm explaining the same thing to every student. And it saves time. I can just pull them together, lecture it, have them do the work on their own that they can, but I'll lecture what needs to be lectured. Teachers in conventional classrooms are fine. Well, if I just had more one-on-one time with the student, I could help him. Okay, so there is that tension. So if you hear me being critical, it's my own personal feeling is I prefer conventional classroom over individualized. However, I've taught both, and I get frustrated with my diminished opportunities for one-on-one discipleship of high school students. I feel like I have never have time to pull the student out and talk to him about what's going on in his life. I have to address it in front of the whole class and in a way that, you know, or else when he exhibits the behavior, I've got to call it down right there, and I can't just go over to his desk and say, hey, let's talk about this. So it's been an adjustment for me, too, to teach conventional. So those are the tensions, and LD students are going to especially highlight the tensions in a conventional classroom. That was the whole basis for Dr. Howard in ACE to start his individualized, because his students had learning problems. And so he and his wife, who were education people, developed curriculum to meet the needs of their learning disabled students. Okay? And they found that it worked for a lot of other students as well. But it has limitations. And you're going to have to work hard to compensate for those, just like you work hard in conventional classroom to compensate. My biggest criticism of individualized classroom is that it's not as relational. It does everything one-on-one unless you shift the model a little bit and begin to incorporate groups. So for that reason, I prefer the conventional classroom. Well, some adjustments. We're going to have to race through these or we're going to be out of time. You can do some classroom adjustments. Seat them where there are as few distractions as possible. A seat in front is usually best. You want to avoid areas of frequent activity. If you have an overly active or disruptive student, you may want to put him in the back of the room. You can put pleasant, good students around a disruptive student, and they can be sort of a calming effect. And because they're not easily, they're focused and motivated enough that they're not going to be distracted for very long by this disruptive student. And so they can also help. You could assign them to tutor and help give input. Okay. There may be time limitations. You can use a calculator clock or an hourglass or a timer, cooking timer, and say, here, take this timer. You can go to the restroom. See here, it's set for 3 minutes or 5 minutes. Make sure you're back in the classroom before this timer goes off. It's kind of fun, maybe. And it gives them a way to watch time. Many of them have a poor concept of time. Schedules. Some LD children have difficulty in shifting from one activity to another. Have them mentally prepared. Now, after you get this done, we're gonna leave the room and we're going to go over here. If they know it's going to happen, that helps. You can give 2 or 3 or 5 minute warnings. There are 2 minutes left for the science report. And give the time notices frequently. Social interaction. Be sure that you don't allow name-calling, teasing, cliques that push them out. And your class will reflect the attitudes you have toward the student. If you appreciate them and incorporate them and respect them, the class will reflect that. Well, what about some adjustments in texts, materials, and assignments? And here's where we're talking about classroom management. How are we going to do this? In teaching, and I guess we're addressing methods here as well, but you can alter tests and materials. Keep in mind, we haven't talked about learning styles yet, but keep in mind that school, what kind of learners are going to benefit most readily from a school environment? People that enjoy words, right? Listening. And if we have lots of visuals, people that enjoy visuals. A lot of people we categorize as LD are people that like to do. And you've probably all seen the person in your community who did lousy in school but has his own mechanic business. And he's able to run his own business, support a family, and he's known to be one of the best in the area. But he hated school, nearly flunked out every grade. Okay? So remember that school is an environment for those of us that love to learn and love to learn by listening and reading and seeing demonstrations on overheads. It's textbook and material adjustments. Many of them have problem copying off the board. Consider use of workbooks or photocopies, old textbooks. We can give the child perhaps an extra set of books for home. They can have them at home so that when he goes home and does homework, has them right there, doesn't have to carry them back and forth every time. You can have a reading partner. This is a person to read with. Could be an adult volunteer. Could be a teacher's aide. It could be another student. And they don't have to divide the material equally. You can have the reading partner read half a page, have the LD person read a paragraph, and the reading partner reads the next section. But they're hearing it read to, they're hearing the material, and then they're also working on their own reading abilities. Have someone available to read to him. I talked about that. Have cassette audio recordings available of reading assignments and texts. Perhaps they need, they can't take in, they can't read very well, but everything they hear is with them. So you find yourself over there constantly reading the test to them, reading the assignment, reading the directions, and once they hear you read it, or you read the question, then they know the answer, but they can't read it and comprehend it. So maybe you can have someone do that or put the directions on audio cassette and they get to have their own headphones and they can play the tape. That's kind of fun. Other reading assignments. You can have the student read the questions at the end of the chapter before he reads the text. That sometimes helps them focus. Okay, what am I looking for here? So read the questions first. Have another student available to take notes for that student. Okay, so that was textbook and materials. What about assignments? Assign no more than what a child can do with minimal assistance. So here's the old tension. We have all this material to cover. They're not getting it, and yet I'm going to chop their assignment. How are they ever going to survive? That's a tough question. I don't know the answer. But if they can't do it at all, what's the point? If they can do a little bit, it's better than nothing. It requires great flexibility on your part. But I don't know of any alternatives. LD children benefit much from writing assignments written in homework. Okay, on the homework pad. Teacher initials it, parents initial it. I think we talked about that the other night on homework here in the discussion groups. But the more communication system you can have between home and school, the better you'll be, the more success you'll experience. Remember that homework time for an LD child includes getting organized time. This gal I was talking about back home, she was notorious. She had all these notebooks. She'd be flipping, it's in here somewhere, and she had this stuck in here and this stuck in there. She moved fast, was always moving this and that. Ugh. Got so tired of that. Getting organized. This year we're going to try something. We're going to have student planners. You ever seen these in your schools? You probably have companies send them to you. We're going to try a student planner. And you have columns for every day, column for each subject. This is going to be in junior high and high school, but you can get them for elementary as well. Junior high and high school, and they can put their evening schedule, plan their homework time, place for mom and dad to sign every day for the homework. They can set goals, keep track of projects and assignments. It's all right there, and it's nifty. It's colorful. It's got your own school cover put on. They put your own school colors and things on the front. So we're going to try that. We'll tell you next year how it works. Number four, try to assign only work that the child has already mastered in class. Okay, what's the point in giving them material if they haven't demonstrated understanding? No point in giving them homework. They'll come back just more frustrated than ever. Design assignments that just about assure a student's success. Here again, I know the tension you feel. Well, I'm just dumbing down the material. They're not keeping up. What am I going to do? Tough question. You're going to have to look at your time. You're going to have to look at what you really want to have them know. And maybe they won't come out knowing as much. Maybe you need to work with mom, and mom has to spend an extra hour every night. Or 2 hours every night, mom and dad, in homework, worksheets. These suggestions here are going to work best with students that can make it, but it's a struggle. Your really difficult students, they're not even going to be able to keep up with these suggestions I'm giving you, and I'm going to have a few options here at the end as to what you might do if that's your situation. Give recognition to successfully completed homework assignments. In other words, praise, 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 praise. Of course, you can give praise a number of different ways. It can be social praise, where you simply say, you know, Johnny, you did it excellent. I really appreciate when you work hard like that. You can give him a candy bar. You can put a chart on the wall. All these things contribute different ways that you can praise your student. Well, what about teaching technique? What can I do? You can change the form without necessarily changing the content. If you're like me, I teach in ways that I like to learn. Thank you. Is that what you had? Okay. I teach you, so I major on lecture. And that's what I enjoy. I enjoy lectures. So I tend to be low on visuals and actual activity things. But obviously that's going to get me in trouble with most LD people. So I'm going to have to shift the way I teach. Keep all directions clear and simple. Avoid multiple assignments and multiple directions. One of the, Jonah Sauter talks about research he saw recently that showed that inner city children, they have a minimal amount of reading exposure, have lots of TV, lots of violence going on, lots of disruption in their lives. And even, that's especially true in them, but even in the larger culture, this is starting to demonstrate itself, that people are no longer able to use subordinate clauses in their writing and in their speaking. For instance, if you would say, although I saw the fire trucks coming very close to me, I still went and got, you know, okay, I put a dependent clause and I still went in the house. I'm trying to make this as long as I can, but anyway, I still went in the house and whatever. Well, that requires you to, okay, so you saw that, but you still did this. And so you have advanced reasoning going on there. Well, more and more people are losing that ability as they become more visual and they learn in shorter bites. So people, we need to avoid multiple assignments and multiple directions. Avoid techniques based on directional patterns. In other words, techniques that require them to put a lot of things together, to notice relationships, to kind of predict where something is going, to look ahead, is going to be difficult. Avoid instructional methods that require a great deal of independent work. They need lots of attention. Avoid having the child demonstrate his weakness in front of his classmates. Don't put them on the spot in front of the whole class. They already know that they're not doing so hot, not doing so well. Don't put them on the spot. Okay, the handout that I have available there for you will have some of this on. Adjustments in testing. How often does a poor grade reflect the LD child's ability at test taking rather than knowledge of the subject area? And I know as a teacher, I don't like that question. I like tests. At least if I'm ready for them. I enjoy taking tests. I don't mind it. Well, some people hate tests. They just can't seem to make sense. And somehow does they knew the material. In fact, they could probably teach some of it. But they look on that test and it just kind of, yeah, the circuits go on overload. Guidelines for making fair and practical tests. Has the material been covered adequately? LD children normally read very slowly. They are rarely able to finish the test in the required time. LD readers put so much effort and energy into decoding words, they lose their focus on the subject content. In other words, they're trying to figure out and they forget by the time they get to the end of the sentence that, we'll see, what was I reading here? And then, so they got to go back and read it again. LD writers likewise put on much effort into writing. They also lose their focus. Okay, so same thing as reading. That sentence isn't worded right. I'm not sure what I did there. They try to focus so hard on writing that they forget why they're writing. So it's hard to be creative when you're that much energy is going into just the act of writing the word, knowing how to spell it, staying on the line or in between the lines, and being neat, like the teacher says. We went to training, and I'll mention more about this later, but training to use a certain program for learning disabilities. And the first thing they had us do was put a page upside down. She forced us to look at this page. No, how was it? Yeah, in the mirror. How does she have us do that? I guess none of the rest of them are here. Anyway, and we had to write looking in the mirror. We couldn't look on the page. We had to write in the mirror. And, we came out with some horrendous looking writing. And she'd look at it. She goes, that's not very neat. Maybe I'll just have you stay in for recess and rewrite that. Okay. She treated us, you know how we do. That's not very good. You better stay. You're not done yet. Well, you can stay in for recess and do that. And we were like, hey, wait a minute. We couldn't. How are you supposed to do that? And the point was, that's the situation. If you're dyslexic or if you have some learning difficulty, a lot of the time, what you're being forced to do is just backwards from what feels right. So keep writing to a minimum. Lists instead of paragraphs. We often say answer each of these questions with a complete sentence. Well, maybe we could do with lists instead. Give oral tests. You can pull out what the child knows by your questioning. LD children need a minimum amount of distraction in the testing environment. Test direction should be clear and simple, one section at a time. Math students might need adjustments in other subject areas that involve math, like science. And then watch the layout of the test as you prepare it. I think there, what we have in mind is what was mentioned the other evening, that you keep your test looking very spacious, using big print, and keep it very spacious, lots of white space, so it is easily done and absorbed, comprehended. Adjustments in grading. Two adapted methods. You can give them, for instance, on their report card, a B3. So they got a B if they're in fifth grade, and they got a B in reading, but the reading was on a third grade level, but you gave them a B. Well, it's not fair to say they got a B in fifth grade reading if it wasn't fifth grade reading. So by putting a B3 on there, if you have developed some kind of system like that, you can also do that with numerical grades, 95, 5 or something. Written reports. Paragraph can give a fair explanation. That's what we've done here. It's just started writing, having the tutor and the classroom teacher each write a report of how the student is doing. And instead of a report card, that half a page or a page goes home every 6 weeks or a quarter and lets the parent know how they're doing. And then those, of course, go in the permanent record as well. A big push today in education is portfolios instead of just simple grades, actual samples of completed work that a student is doing. It again has to do a little bit with this, some of these pushes that we have now for outcome-based education and so on. General thoughts on grading. A grade of A for effort, attitude, and improvement is really not fair if the child is not doing grade-level work. Grades that hide failure do not create success. And I know it's tough as a teacher. The students try so hard, and you work and work and work, put all kinds of time in, and they still do work that really you wouldn't pass if it was anybody else. Well, by all means, don't give them a C. I know I have had some teachers already who they'd come to me frustrated about this student, and they say, I don't know what to do. I don't see how he can do second grade work if he's only doing this well in first grade, and it's February. I said, well, what kind of grades has he been getting? Oh, report card shows B's and C's. And I said, wait a minute. How are you going to tell a parent that the student isn't doing well when they're getting B's and C's? So there has to be some adaptation. There has to be some explanations, reports. Something has to be done so that you don't see that kind of disparity between what is happening and what kind of grades they're getting. It's equally unfair to give an LD child a D or an F when they are working hard and making progress. Should grades be eliminated? Doing away with grades relieves the child of reminders of failure. It also can eliminate the rewards of success. So obviously you see here some tension. Again, you're going to just, it takes a lot of wisdom and talking with people and deciding, how am I going to give this child the best opportunity I can and still be accurate about what he's doing? It's not grades that harm children. It's repeated failure. That's a good point to remember. It's repeated failure that harms children. I always told my students who never seemed to get better than C's and D's and got frustrated, worked very hard to get those grades, and then their friend come along, who's a straight A student, and they say, oh, I studied for 15 minutes for that test. Yeah, it's no biggie. I say, how can they do that? They just get so frustrated. And I said, well, think of it this way. In the big scheme of things, in life, you've learned to work 3 hours straight to do that assignment. They can do it in 45 minutes. Now, who has learned the most self-discipline? No question. No question that the LD student has learned the most self-discipline. I said, the payoff will come. I said, you just hang on, the payoff will come. So you can encourage these people that school is not the only arena in life that determines success for later on. Some general thoughts. Most school teachers did well in their own schooling. I've told you that already. And so it's hard for us to understand the LD child. Be aware that in most cases, parents have known that their child does poorly academically. In parent-teacher conference, speak of positive aspects of the child's performance and behavior as well as the negative. So that's very easy to do, is become negative in that parent-teacher conference. The parent already knows. They don't need you to sit down and run through the whole list of things they're not doing well on. Talk. Ask questions. What's your opinion? How well do you think your child would be able to do? What have you done? What has worked for you? Well, and you can go on and say, as you can imagine, they're not doing well here. Here's what we're trying to do to help. And we keep working at it that way. Does a child not read well because he has a discipline problem, or is he a discipline problem because he can't read well? Both are a possibility. Don't assume anything with an LD child. A nod of the head doesn't necessarily mean understanding. I had a student like that last year. He was just such a likable guy, nice guy. And I sit there and I look at him in class and he'd have that old smile and he'd be nodding his head, get the test and he'd flunk it flat out. What in the world is going on? Be as positive and encouraging as possible to a child's responses. Keep them thinking. Don't shut them off. Keep the child at the point of stretching, re-challenging them to growth without overloading. You know, if you've taught, those are all, they sound great on paper, don't they? A couple things that we've done, and I just realized now, I was going to bring this address for you, and maybe I can bring it tomorrow. Patty talked last evening, not many of you were here, but last evening she talked about simple math and reading. How many of you are familiar with simple math and reading programs? Okay, well, I'll bring the address, maybe some material for you to look at as an opportunity. What they do is they approach the learning disabilities through association and try to give them ways. And Patty, would you be able to explain in 30 seconds what their basic philosophy is? How they get...
Yeah, basically through association. Making things familiar things. Like, if they're delicate, relating that to a word. Like, I'm going to see through visual pictures. Doing a picture in their mind, like, something like that.
Tell them what a peanut butter and jelly word is. So give a word like that that would have, yeah, you hear the O but don't hear the A. The O is the peanut butter. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Something else we've been trying to do is something that's called sensory integration therapy, called SIT. And it's a company called Essential Learning Institute, ELI, called ELI. It's computer-based, and as I understand it, it has much the same philosophy that the NILD program has. Well, the NILD requires one-on-one as well as a lot of parental involvement, where the computer-based just requires 40 minutes to an hour every day, 4 days a week. What it does is they see it, they hear it, and they have to do something in response to what they hear and see. So it incorporates the three primary areas: seeing, hearing, and doing. And so are you familiar with that program? Yeah, the gentleman that started it is associated, he's a regional supervisor for ACE, but it's not connected with ACE necessarily. They've had a lot of success with it with middle-aged people, older people, college students. It was recommended to us by a school that's used it for a number of years now. Of course, when we started using it and our students weren't doing very well, we started telling the company, hey, what's going on here? And they say, well, you have students who are very learning disabled. So they're going to make very slow progress. It's going to take them 2 years at least. And we thought it only took 6 months or 9 months to see some marked improvement. So there are limitations. And the more serious the problem, the more difficult it is to do anything about it. Primary thing that I want to leave with you on this is that should an LD child be denied a Christian education? I guess that's the question you have to ask yourself. Should they be denied the opportunity? And I see some heads shaking. I don't think so either. Of course, if you've tried to teach them, you understand the price of that commitment. It's not easy. Let me read you a poem that Sharon Yoder from my hometown there read in a workshop last winter here. It's entitled, Not in 100 Years. In fourth grade, one boy, Milton, couldn't read. Gawky, tall, and thin, when it was his turn, he would stand, fumble with a word or two, then sit down again. Hopeless? But one day, a few words came. Then a few more. Our teacher stood, moved near. Yes, yes, that's right. You can read it, Milton. He went on, stumbling. But words came. Of course, keep going, Milton. I knew you could. And now the next word starts with M, just like your name. Yes, yes, go on, good. Every one of us sat, listening, watching, as Miss Baldwin pushed words out of Milton, prompting, urging. She waved her arms. Her voice rose and rose, and I suddenly sat, glued to my desk, amazed, seeing what I had never dreamed to see in 100 years, great tears in my teacher's eyes. Well, I'm not going to have enough time to cover everything today, but we'll race on here a little bit. Talk about gifted students. These are the ones you enjoy having in your class. Remember, as I said before, it's sobering to remember that they probably don't need you as much as you need them. Gifted students, how do you challenge that student who is just very, very capable? I had one of these in high school. They're a lot of fun. He wasn't all that sharp socially, but people respected him for his brain, okay? He could just absorb information, incredible pace. He'd be doing, of course, I had an individualized classroom, and so if he'd be doing the pace in physical science on light, he'd have 2 or 3 library books on properties of light, you know, physics and this kind of thing. And he'd be reading these things, you know, while he's doing this little booklet on physical science. And most of my people were sweating through it and glad they only had that much to work through. He was just reading and curious, you know, and absorbing all this and saying, I wonder what happened. He was a divergent thinker as well. I wonder what happened if you do this, you know. And he's always come with these ideas. And he took a course, a Bible course. It was supposed to be a senior level course. And he said it was on the life of Christ. I said, Daryl, what'd you think of the course? Went through it. And he says, I don't know, it was okay. And I said, what do you think? Did you like it? What didn't you like about it? He says, I just had the sense the whole time I went through it, I was just playing a big chess game. I said, really? This kind of, you know, comparisons he makes. I said, what do you mean? How was it like a chess game? He says, you just had the sense that they already knew where they were going to come out. They wanted to make sure you were going to be there too the whole time you're doing it. Very capable, very insightful, saw the big picture, absorbed information. We had an accounting course there, and that was very difficult to do on an individualized basis, and had some problems with the course and the way it was designed and structured. But he pushed through that thing with amazing speed and didn't need any help from me. Usually I had to help people all the time with this course, and he didn't need any help. And compared to different accounting programs he had on his computer, his dad had a business, and so he was doing other things at home along with the program. So just a very bright student. How do you challenge these people? Here's some characteristics. They learn rapidly. They reason things out. They think very clearly, recognize relationships, comprehend meanings, retain what they've heard or read without much rote drill. They know about many things of which other children are unaware. They exhibit superior social reasoning, have an unusual ability to relate to and motivate other people. And we'll qualify that. They're talking about an all-around kind of person here, and I'm going to tell you that it's very seldom you'll have this kind of person. They're around, but very seldom will you have people that are highly intellectual and also relate very well with people. If you find them that have both, they're fantastic, but they're not all that common. They do some academic work significantly in advance of the class. They think on a high level, but classroom performance seems to contradict this. I had a little bit of that with this guy. Depending on what the subject was, I had to convince him it was worth his time, but I had the real sense sometimes that he felt like he already knew it. So what? I mean, you know, this is simple stuff. Why do I need to go through this? They can read books that are 1 or 2 years in advance of the rest of the class. They perform difficult mental tasks, ask many questions, interested in a wide range of things. They're very original. They use good but unusual methods or ideas. They're willing to spend time beyond the ordinary assignments or schedule. This one more example this guy had in high school. His dad, very differently from this boy, was very black and white. Very much black and white, right and wrong, absolute, convergent thinker. And his mom was really where he got a lot of his smarts. Now, his dad was a very sharp man, too, but just not divergent thinker at all. Once he made up his mind about something, and he was the Rock of Gibraltar, you know. Well, as this guy gets into his teens, this is difficult because he wanted to ask his dad some hard questions, and his dad wanted to just tell him, it's just the way it is. Okay, it's just this way. Just take my word for it. And at one point, and I'm still not sure where he's going to come out spiritually, really, he just asked some very difficult questions. And there's not too many people in his life that are able to give him a lot of guidance on some of those and give him answers that satisfy his mind. And why does God do that? I'm not sure why he gives people minds like that. But I think he'll come out okay. I talked to him again here last summer. He has some radical ideas, but I think he'll do okay. I'm praying that he will. It's interesting as well, his dad doesn't want him to go to college, doesn't want him to do anything, just learn how to do electrical work. He would read computer manuals. He knows several different computer languages, did computer work on the side while he was in high school. So he may not need college, he can just teach himself maybe, I don't know. But I'm not saying he should go to college, I'm simply saying that a person like that, that kind of mind, it's very difficult. You can't stop a mind, you can't freeze a mind like that. It will go somewhere for information. You're much better off to equip it rather than try to cramp it. Okay, just a real quick model here on curriculum development for gifted people. Again, you're not going to have time to do this, but you ought to know about it. Just because it will help you if you keep in the back of your mind to help these people. And I'm hoping you will try to find the time. This gifted person, if we start in the middle with the gifted person, and here's what they do. If they're gifted in one of these areas, here's what you can do in the curriculum. Okay, so here's the gifted person. If he conveys ideas well, you can encourage a variety of products, community resources, interviewing skill, investigation of real life problems. Or if he's an original thinker, give him multi-problem approaches, examine many points of view, use discrepancies, come up with an original product. Let's say he's very observant, very inquisitive, curious. Here's things you can do. If you want a copy of this, you can come see me afterwards. But gifted students are fun to have in your class, and it's fun to utilize them on debates or discussion panels, maybe it'd be better than debates. But discussion groups, have them research something and present information and then lead a discussion on it. And it was a lot of fun to try to pull this guy into controversial discussions in high school. And he was very self-reserved. He'd get uncomfortable in front of a group. But he would sit there and we'd say, Daryl, what do you think? Oh, I don't know. And then he'd come out with and just kind of blow everybody out of the water with a few comments. Very humble guy, really. Well, people have talked, we talked about learning styles and how people learn, and this sort of wraps up our discussion on learning theory. It looks like we're not going to have much time for discussion today. Let's just cover a few things here on learning styles. Let me just give you two considerations to remember as you think about learning styles, that they are not the answer to all learning problems. I'm taking number two first there. Not the answer to all learning problems. Number one, what I said earlier, the teacher will generally teach from the learning style that they have. So if you love to talk and listen, you're going to do a lot of talking. You're not going to bother with visuals and activity. If you like to see things, then you're going to have lots of overheads and colorful displays and bulletin boards, and your classroom will just be ablaze with color. If you're a project doing sort of person, you're going to drive the auditory and visual people crazy because they don't want to move out of their desk. Just tell me. Just show me. But you want to do. And so you're going to push them out of their comfort zone all the time. It will work okay for them. They'll probably do okay anyway. Here's characteristics of auditory learners. And there's a book by Cynthia Tobias entitled The Way They Learn. A lot of this comes out of there. There's one copy, or at least there was one copy in the bookstore yet. If you want more, we can order it for you. Talkers. They hear everything. This person hears the noise in the next room. They hear everything going on around them. They may have poor handwriting. They may have eye fatigue. They may mouth words when reading silently. Organization is not a priority. You can help them by using a tape recorder. Okay, spelling is sometimes difficult with these people, and sometimes by having them spell a word on a tape player, have them record it and then listen to it. How do you spell dog? D-O-G. And then play it. Study with someone. They do well listening to music while working. I don't know about you, but I have a very difficult time having music going and trying to work. I can't do it. I either listen to the music or else I shut it off and get busy. Some people say, I can't work without music going. Okay? Well, they're probably an auditory learner. Visual learner. They like demonstrations. They're doodlers. They visualize finished products. They win the handwriting award. They notice new things. They're observant and quiet. They'd rather show than tell. They prefer art versus music. They're writers. They read by sight at times rather than phonetically. They're note takers, list makers. You can tell them two or three times how to do something. And they're listening, and then a minute later they say, no, wait, how do I do this? Okay, they can't. And they have difficulty distinguishing sounds. We can help them by keeping them toward the front by using charts and graphs and other visuals. You can help the visual learner. I should just comment that a lot of us are probably a combination. We have a dominant and a secondary learning style. And again, this isn't the answer to everything, but by keeping this in mind, it helps you as a teacher stay flexible in your presentation. Kinesthetic learners have great command of the physical body. Big chunks of study time do not work. It was interesting, the teacher that I had in school or in college that was the head of the education department was fairly kinesthetic in his approach to learning. And so he said whenever he studied for a test, he studied for 15 minutes and he'd get up, walk around the room, go get a drink, sit back down, say another 15 minutes, get up. Well, that's not me at all. I bury myself, you know, for a half hour, hour, 2 hours at a shot. I want the big chunk of study time to really absorb this. Kinesthetic people are not that way. They're quickly bored with lectures. They learn by doing. Explanations and visual things are confusing. Prefer to use trial and error method of learning. Have strong feelings as to whether something is right or wrong, good or bad, but often have difficulty explaining why they feel that way. I've seen people like that. They'll say something, make a strong statement. So really, so what? So you ask a question about it, and they get a little agitated.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.